Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's time for the show that brings the magic right to your speakers. Ears up!
Hey, welcome back to the show, everybody. Ears Up podcast. We got a full house tonight because Terrence has a show tonight, but that's not really what it is. The great Tom Amin is back with us, and he's going to be talking with us about his new Disney album. We're going to be playing some cuts from that. We're going to have a little bit of fun with Tom. And then after Tom, Terrence is going to go through the history of Soarin' All Over the Dang Place, I think is what it's called. All over the heckin' world.
Which is funny, because if I remember correctly, Terrence does not like Soarin'.
Terrence, is that true?
Yeah, you remember, I don't like it very much. He's echoing a lot.
Terrence's MO is that he likes to do histories on attractions that he doesn't like. I think he's trying to turn his thought process around when he does these.
Okay, a little Stockholm syndrome. Yes. Or something like that.
Something like that.
Yeah. Now I love Soarin', mm-hmm, because I know the history of the ride.
Yeah.
Okay. Terrence, is that true?
That's yes.
Fine. Okay.
So I don't love Soarin' still. I think it's decent, but it won't be a walk around anymore.
It's interesting because whenever I do like a segment or anything, I only want to do things I like. I don't want to do something I hate.
Same.
It just annoys me.
Yeah, but I think we're at the point in the show's lifespan where that's all there is left. It's just stuff we don't like.
Look, Turtle Talk with Crush was rough, not luff.
It was luff.
So what I would say, Jeremy, I understand what you're saying. For me, don't like doing it just on rides that I like, because I tend to really dig into the things that I like about the ride. I like doing it on rides that I don't really like that much. Like, I really want to do the history of Splash Mountain because I'm not a big Splash Mountain fan, but I think that it would be neat to look at how they transformed all of the animatronics from American Sings over to be in that one, and then made half of them not work 5 years later. I'd really like to look into that.
Yeah, I'm sure you'll get really far in that. Anyway, before we get to Tom, welcome back, Tom. Thank you for slumming it with us one more time, by the way.
Oh, thanks for having me, guys. It's a pleasure to be here.
We are on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. You can watch us necropost over on Pinterest if you want to go back in time over there. If you have feedback for the show, that goes to Taryn at earsup-podcast.com. Show suggestions to Taryn at earsup-podcast.com. You can say hi.
Hi.
To Bev, who is currently recovering from her relief pitching debut last night for the Oakland A's.
I'm a lefty.
She has a giant heating pad on her neck or her arm or whatever. Anything else? Me, Jason, earsup-podcast.com. If you guys are planning to go back to the parks anytime soon, your best bet to do that in a concise manner is Concierge. You go to concierge.com, buy your tickets through Concierge, allow them to help plan your vacation. It costs nothing. All of the services they offer cost you nothing. You just pay what the parks would charge you for the tickets. But you get so much more. You get help booking your resis. You get help booking dinner resis. You get help with Genie Plus and Lightning Lane. And Lightning Lane Plus, if that's a thing. If that's a thing, they're going to know about it. I don't really know. Maybe I just made that up. Who can really tell? But go to concierge.com right now. And also, if you're going to Universal, if you want to go down and do the LA thing where you're like, oh, I'm going to go to Disneyland for 3 days, but I want to pop over to Universal or whatever, you can do all of that through Concierge too. And if you want to sort of motor around LA for a day, Concierge will help you do that too. So they do much more than just Disney trips. But check it out, concierge.com. That's what's going on. If you want to support the show, go over to etsy.com/shop/coveyears. And you can get our brand new tie-dye churro shirts. I'm going to put some tall boy sizes up
I didn't even know that was a thing.
It's a thing, I suppose, with this new company now. I'm transferring slowly but surely, transferring some of these shirts over to the new company because they're a little faster shipping.
Cool.
And the shirts, I think, a little bit better. But I had a listener reach out and he said, hey, do you have, like, I'm a tall dude. Do you have any, like, longer shirts? And I go, actually, yes, I think I do.
Nice.
So I sent him some. He goes, it's perfect. This cool. is, you're great. So, you know, those will be up here, you know, in
But do you have crop tops? Because that is all the rage.
Crop, like a tube top?
I'm like requesting a 2X on the crop top.
isn't that just a small spirit jersey?
Crop tops are like short shirts.
Okay.
Like, they're belly shirts.
They're belly shirts where your belly hangs out.
I don't know.
They're horrible, but it's literally the only kinds of shirts you can find as a female right now.
Really?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, and I've actually bought some and then I just stare at them in my closet. I'm like, I'm literally never going to wear that.
Okay. All right. Finally, everything's coming up weird. No,
stomachs. Coming up cropped.
Yeah, that's bad. It's a bad fashion moment for women.
And they're bringing low-rise jeans back.
I know. And the combination is just
perfect.
Well, of course you love it.
It's early 90s Britney Spears. I love it.
Yes.
So, Taryn and Beverly, can you answer this? The low-rise for women with the boxers showing, is that a thing again? Because I saw that today.
You saw? No, I did not know that was a thing.
With a crop top. It was like the top half looked like she just came out of the gym. The bottom half looked like she was Gwen Stefani circa 1993.
Oh, I love this.
You have a flannel on over top? That's usually like a thing.
Wow, that's a whole other level of 90s.
Yeah, that's definitely 90s, you know, R&B music video. Mm-hmm. Like, did she have a condom over one eye?
Yeah, TLC,
so,
exactly.
So, creep. Yeah.
Taryn, I hate to disappoint you, but no.
Oh, wow.
No crop tops.
Disappointing.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that. Yeah. I would have done that for sure. Because they're all, if they were especially all over print, can you imagine just like Terrence's top half of his face on a crop top? That'd be funny.
Oh, wow. I bet people would buy a shirt with just Terrence's face on it.
Think so?
I would buy it all out. It'd be amazing.
That's the beauty about print-on-demand garments, Terrence. Never run out. So there you go, man. Keep buying them. Anyway, the best way to support the show is patreon.com/earsup. Right after this show, we're going to be doing the secret show, which you only get over on Patreon. So if you're a Patreon member, $5 and up, you get access to the secret show. I'm still working on another pyramid, the Eye of the Ears, which, by the way, I put the shirt up, I think, again, on Etsy. You can buy that now if you want to. I don't know, whatever. It's taken a lot longer than I thought.
Don't you have, like, 25 pages right now or something?
I have, actually, yeah, I think I have 23, as a matter of fact. Jeez, about in-depth discussion. Sorry, Jeremy, to steal the in-depth moniker. But an in-depth, detailed look on Walt and his the accusations that he was a Nazi sympathizer in the 40s.
That's a big topic.
In the 30s and 40s. I know. Yeah. It's hard, man.
I'm surprised you're tackling it.
Well, that's part of the vibe of that show. And by the way, the show is no extra on Patreon. Whenever I do it, everybody gets it, you know, for included the cost of being a Patreon supporter. But it's hard because you have to sort of set up. There's so much background. There's so much context about Hollywood in the 30s, how they were dealing with Nazi Germany and that transition, and then how Walt fit into that. And it's just like, because people like to cherry pick stuff and they go, well, Walt said this or Walt did this. Yeah, but it doesn't. Yeah.
But without context.
Right. And it's hard. It's like real journalism for once. Geez. Again, sorry, Jeremy. Wow. But yeah.
We haven't seen that from you.
No. Wow. Jeremy's fired. All right. Welcome, Tom. Welcome back, my friend. It's good to see you.
It's good to be here. You know, I'm a big fan of the show. I listen probably almost every week.
Oh, man.
So I'm excited to talk to you guys again.
Awesome. Yeah, you were just on the Bantha Milk Boys podcast, right?
Yes.
You
earlier did that. This week. Yes, I was.
How was that?
Nick and Rob, it was excellent. It was really, it's always fun to talk to them because Nick's a musician as well. So he like really knows how to explain things and gets into the like logistics of the music a lot. And it's really fun. But I had a great time with them. We had a good show.
Awesome. That's
a lot
good.
Of fun.
Yeah. I mean, they're teachers and they're both into music or whatever. So it's like, I can imagine they can really break it down a lot better than I can going, yeah, the, you know, snapping on the one and the three is what you do.
That's it.
Yeah. It's what you do.
Snapping on the one and the three.
Just Just don't acknowledge it.
I got my rhythm. Anyway,
it's like it's two and four people. Like that's what you want to tell people who clap. It's two and four. You never clap with one and three.
So why?
What are you gonna do?
Why is that?
Because it's the downbeat.
It's the downbeat, and when you're clapping on one and three, it's more. It makes it more cement. It's more like how do I? What's the word I'm looking for? It's
syncopated.
More like
syncopated.
Yeah, or two and four.
If you're clapping on the one and the three, then you need to be like
one, two, three. Four,
like you need to be clapping on every beat.
But in most pop music that's 4/4 timing, the drums are kicking it on the second and fourth beat.
Exactly.
The snare. One, two, three, four. Like it just makes more sense. But a lot of times when you're in big crowds, I don't know what happens, but people just tend to gravitate towards clapping on the first and third beat of a measure.
Oh, I know what happens. It's called white.
Yeah, it's white. It's white clapping. Right, exactly. That's kind of it, actually.
Wow. Well, there you go.
But anyway, it's one of those musical things. What are you going to do? You know?
I thought you were going to end it with claw, at least, so that it was some sort of booze.
It's simply just white.
Well, you know what? And I don't.
Girl ain't wrong.
I don't know. I'm not really very musical, so I'll just be like, yeah, you get your own beat and your own pattern in your head. And then it's just like you look around and suddenly everyone's looking at you like I'm doing it wrong. Okay. Let's try to adjust. You sort of float it off into the two and four.
I saw a video and was it on YouTube? I can't remember, but it was a pianist that was performing in front of an audience and they were clapping along with him in one and three. And he was able to finagle it. He added like an extra beat to one of his measures and then continued with the song. So then it ended up, they were clapping on two and four. It was really cool. I can't remember the video who it was, but it was really neat. Oh, I've never seen anyone do that.
That's awesome.
That reeks of Yanni.
It was not Yanni. It was not him. Anyway, it's the best. The good thing is, though, as long as people are clapping to your music, that's what you really want, right?
Yeah,
that's
what's most important. It's like saying, "Oh, you're cheering at too high of a pitch. Can you please cheer for me lower?" I mean, maybe that's not it at all. Does it throw off the musicians, do you think, a little bit too?
It kind of does because you're not really into that kind of groove.
Okay.
You're trying to make the beats two and four, and when you're hearing the one and three so loud and so constant, it can be a little distracting, I think.
It really is. It makes you feel like the people are not with you.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true.
I think that's why, you know, sometimes musicians, like singers specifically, when they don't have anything, if there's like a breakdown or whatever, they don't have anything to sing, they'll go up and they'll clap. You know, they'll do the big arm over the top to like get the crowd going. And I wonder if it's more of like, these guys are not in sync. Let's put them back. Let's put them back in sync. It's just putting everything back.
100%.
Rather than to wind up the crowd, right?
And I'd still rather have someone do the big over their head clap than somebody to do the air guitar during the breakdown like that. Like
someone in the audience?
And do the air guitar.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Well, look, I can't go to concerts now, I guess.
We'll train you, Jason. We'll train you on how to do it.
I think
we'll
might need some training up, Tom. Absolutely. Well, let's talk a little bit.
We'll take care of it.
Let's talk a little bit about your new album, The Softer Side of Magic.
Yes. Ooh,
I already like it. Yes.
When did this come out?
I wanted to do a follow-up to last year I did Magical Meditations, which was really slow, like really like relaxation, which I wanted. That's what I wanted. I wanted an album that you could just put on and go to sleep or study or whatever. I wanted to kind of continue that, but do it a little bit with regular piano sounds. And there's little crescendos. There's more crescendos on this album, but it's still basically along the same lines of it's a nice album to put on when you're having dinner or relaxing, or if you want to take a nap and put on your headphones and listen to the music and chill out. It's made for that. And there were songs that I wanted to try doing in this vein that I had not done yet. So that was another reason to do it.
Okay.
And I really like how it turned out. I really like this one. I think it's good. I think the flow is pretty good. And I've been getting some positive feedback. So I that's a good thing for me. So
yeah,
it's always good when people like it, you know?
Absolutely. I was poking around a little bit, listening to the clips on your website. I do like it. It's very good. It's very soft, but it's not too soft. If that makes sense, there's still a little edge, I guess, or there's still a little, I don't know, vibrancy. And man, this is where I need to get Nick back on the line. Nick, explain to me how to talk to other musicians about the thing that they made.
Yeah, there's Cristiano. There's more breathing in the piano in compared to the one I did last year. So definitely,
Okay. Well, I would love to play some clips from it. And nice. I would also love to do is, I think what we did last time is see if we can guess the song.
Okay.
And we're going to start with an easy one. I think it's an easy one. I don't know. Maybe it is. Maybe it is. But here we go. See if you guys can guess this song. Here we go.
Star Wars theme.
There you go.
Yeah.
Terrence got it.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Taryn. The Star Wars theme by John Williams.
Thank you. Love it. It's so beautiful.
Love it.
It's so soft and like angelic, you know, and that's a very upbeat song, I guess. I mean, when I think of it, I always get energized because maybe it's what it's tied to. But to take it and slow it down, but still give it some power. That's good.
Thank you. That's what I wanted to do, because like, as we all know, when you first hear that theme, it's so majestic and so loud and so wonderful. It's the opening. It announces Star Wars. I mean, that's just what it does. So slow it down and make it more lullaby-ish.
Yes. 'Cause
the theme works that way, I thought. You know, John Williams is so good. His themes are so wonderful. You can try to, you know, experiment with them and do different things. But to slow it down like that, I thought was really cool.
Yeah.
And it still worked for me. I thought it's really pretty and melodic and soothing.
When you said that you had some songs that you still wanted to perform in that sort of manner. Is that something you think about and then you just sit at the piano and you sort of work it out until it fits?
Yeah, I have ideas. That actually was one of the big ideas of why I wanted to do the album.
Okay.
That first theme.
Okay.
So I'm like, I know I can do this. But yeah, it's kind of like going through your memory. It's songs that you love or songs that I feel like I can connect to.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's most important to me. Doing music that means something to me. It really helps to put the feeling into it when you're recording.
Yeah.
Yeah. But just to go through and play. And I like to experiment with songs that are fast and make them slow and see how they turn out and are they any good and that kind of stuff. So that's what I did with this album. As we might talk about, but Be Our Guest is one of the songs on this album. And we all know how that's a huge Broadway show stopping number.
Yeah.
So to slow it down and put it into this lullaby-ish kind of a theme, I thought was really interesting to do and really cool. So I like to experiment with stuff like that.
I love
it. Did you use a digital piano again, or was that a real piano?
Yes. It's called Noir Piano. It's a patch that goes through my Pro Tools system. And it's one of my favorite piano sounds. I do not have a piano in my place. Otherwise, I would be recording on a real piano. There's nothing like real instruments. I always say that all the time. There's nothing like it. But I don't have a piano here. And it's expensive to go into studios to record. It takes a lot of time. So that's why I do it here at home. But yes, I have a keyboard, and then it triggers the sounds on the computer.
Okay.
And this one's called Noir. It's a gorgeous piano sample by a guy in Germany. Nils Fromms is his name. He's like a new age.
Oh, yeah, Nils.
Nils is it? Yeah, he's so good. It's
called Nilly, but...
Are you joking? Right?
I don't actually know Nils Fromms.
It's his piano that he sampled. It's his 9-foot stock Yamaha Grand or something, or Steinway, that he's meticulously sampled. And that's what I use. I love it.
I just couldn't believe, because
when we heard it, I couldn't believe how authentic it sounded. And I was like, he must have been in a piano.
It's a very good piano sound, but it's coming from a keyboard. Now that you can also add, which I have not done on this album, but you can add the foot pedal noises. You can add mechanical wood noises. From the piano. It's all in there.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's crazy what you can do.
It's like taking an MP3 of like off a CD and then adding like the pops and hisses to like, you know, get it more like a record. That's crazy to me.
All right, it's that kind of stuff.
Here's the next one. This one might be a little tougher. I don't know. It depends on when I just like I'm just, you know, moving the little
just dropping the needle.
Yeah,
right?
Just dropping the needle. So it might just be on the chorus. I don't know.
Rainbow Connection.
Remember that time.
It's still so happy, but also sad at the same time. And I guess that's the feeling of the song, like in general, right?
I've always felt that way about it. It's a beautiful song. It's a little haunting, a little sad.
Yes.
At the same, exactly that's how I've always felt about that melody. But it's a gorgeous melody. I love it.
Oh, it's classic.
I
love it.
And that's one song where I had posted on. I didn't know if I was going to put that on the album because I didn't know if people would really want to hear it, and I just didn't know. So I posted on like on Facebook and stuff. I said, what do you think? Should I put this on? And every person said, yes, do Rainbow Connection. That's why that went on there.
Yeah. Well, no one hates that song.
Yeah.
No.
That's true.
I think Terrence hates it.
I hate that song. I just hate showing up to a person's wedding and finding out that that's the song we're singing as their first dance. Yeah. And they didn't tell us beforehand.
By the way, you're singing our first dance. Thanks.
I did not know that's how that went down.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Well, it just means that you guys are that talented to be able to pull that off. They had faith in you.
That's not what that is. That's not what that means.
Okay, well, you know, what do you want from me? All right, here's another one.
That was so pretty. I can't place it, though.
I know the song, but I can't.
You'll know it when you hear the melody.
Any guesses?
I'm gonna be so mad when you tell me what this is.
I know
you really are,
and I can't. Oh boy!
Should I give you a hint?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Think Snow White.
Whistle While You Work.
Yeah.
Yes.
What?
Wow.
Yes.
Whistle While You Work.
Wow.
Da, 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 da. Was that like
a waltz?
Was that a waltz?
Because for that, I changed it and put it into a waltz time instead of four beats in a measure. It's three beats. So it changes the feel of it and makes it more of a waltz. But I thought it really worked for that song. It really liked it.
Can we hear it again a little bit?
Can we hear it again? Yeah, sure.
Well, now it totally makes it. Like, I hear it.
Uh-huh. This is the intro. Like, that's the musical interlude.
Now you hear it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very cool.
And you change some of the chord patterns in it, you know, to make it fresh. And
at one point, it sounded like you put it into a relative minor as well during that chorus part. That was really good.
Thanks, Terrence. That was a fun one to do because I knew I wanted to do something different instead of just play it kind of traditionally how it was. I wanted to spin it, make it more like a waltz, you know, and make it relaxing.
It was beautiful. Absolutely.
Thank you, man. Thank you. Oh, wow. Thank you.
Yeah, it's good because it's sort of like, I don't know if it's just the waltz timing or format or whatever, but it's sort of, you feel obligated to just start moving. You know, right? it's a very like, literally a moving piece. You like, I think I have to move now. I'm being reprogrammed.
I gotta do something. couldn't help myself from being like,
like this, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's what the waltz does to you.
Yeah.
All right, here's another.
And Tom, you're not playing this from sheet music, is that right?
No, except there were a couple songs that I did. I had to download the sheet music to check the melodies, but it was for the Manuel Miranda songs.
Okay,
because his stuff his stuff has a lot of rhythm in it. So I had, but most of the stuff, you know, I played these songs for years. You know, we grew up with them, and they were some of the first Disney songs I learned, you know, like That Whistle While You Work and stuff. So I've known them for a long time. Yeah.
Since you're playing it by ear and from heart, like you're not playing it from music, how do you decide how it's going to go? I mean, I would have to at least minimally have some sort of outline of start, middle, end.
Sure.
You know, like how do you do that?
I guess, well, if you know the song really well, I think it's kind of just in your memory bank somewhere. So you could kind of pull up. So I know kind of how the song goes generally. And then you just start to work on it verse by verse, kind of change it and do what you want to it. I can remember it all for some reason. I don't know. I just do.
It's a creative process.
But it's a creative process and it takes time. It does take a lot of time.
Yeah. Yeah, Jeremy, basically just get good is what he's saying. Just get good.
That is so rude.
Thank you for breaking that down so succinctly.
Yeah. Nick has nothing on me.
Jeremy,
man.
We love his stuff, but it just takes time and it does. But like you said, like some music, I do want to download it and look at it and see because it's complicated. And I don't know, like we'll talk about the Manuel Miranda stuff, but I'd never played any of his music before. So I needed to see it and download it and see the structures and stuff. So yeah, there's times where I absolutely have to do that.
Okay, yep. Here's another one. I'm not entirely sure where this will go, but let's see.
Okay.
Moana.
Yeah.
Did you say Moana?
Moana. I love Moana.
Moana, too.
Yeah. Where she goes and meets Maui, the big dragon. Yeah. God, the piano sounds so clear and perfect.
The reverb on it is insane.
That was good.
Mm-hmm. It's like retrospective. I don't know. It's good. I mean, you're the way that you connect with these pieces is sort of, you know, it's emotional stirring. As a listener, knowing nothing about most things, I feel connected already with the way that you're translating these songs.
I love it. Thank you. Cause that's really all I want. I think that's what any musician wants, just to be able to connect with people, to connect with who's ever listening, try to put as much emotion as you can into it. And now that was one of the songs, Jeremy, I had to download that because the verses get really rhythmical and stuff. And I needed to just see the structure and see, you know, how it goes, how he writes it. Cause mm-hmm. this stuff is, there's a lot of notes in there. And cause he writes a lot of that stuff's for vocals, you know? Mm. So it's made for that, but I thought it worked really well. I just wanted to do a more straightforward version of that. It's a great song. I've never recorded any of Lin-Manuel Miranda's stuff before. So that was the first time to do one of his songs. And it was, I really liked it. I mean, I loved playing his music.
It's a good song, man. That Moana soundtrack is really good.
I love it. It's a great soundtrack.
Yeah.
Well, and what I love about your music, and I think this really speaks to every song I've heard of yours, is that it's a familiar sound. So you enjoy it because it's familiar, but it's so uniquely you that it kind of takes it to like the next level, and it takes it like we all love Disney so much, but you don't always want to be in this Disney bubble. Sometimes you just want to be listening to jazz music, but you also have a 4-year-old, and this is kind of like a really nice way for everyone to get what they want, you know, like because we'll play it in the morning when we make coffee, and it's like you replaced our old jazz, you know, like just soundtrack or whatever that we used to listen to and wake up to. And now it's Tom Amin, and it's nice because it's familiar, but it's different and it's you. And I enjoy it so much.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate that. That's great. I love that. And I love that.
I've never really heard it described, what you just said, basically, like the songs are written for vocals. And mm-hmm. it's really enjoyable to hear them in a way that they're not necessarily designed for vocals. Like, your pieces are not designed to be sung along with necessarily.
Sure.
And it sort of takes the same song that we all know and love and gives it a completely different perspective, which is really enjoyable, actually. So.
Thank you so much. I wonder too, if instrumentals, I've always wondered this, if, you know, because when you're listening to music that has words, your mind, you kind of tune into those words because you're listening to the lyrics and what they're saying. Mm-hmm. I wonder if sometimes instrumentals give you more creative license in your own mind. Hmm. Do you know what I mean? That you're not listening at words. You're listening just to more of the music and melodies. So you can kind of make up stuff in your mind, like what the words would be, or just listen to the melody. I wonder if it's easier on the mind, maybe, in a way, I guess.
Freestyle rapping. That's what you need to work on next, Tom.
Because, like, if I'm working, like, say I'm working on the computer or stuff, I'll put on most times instrumental music so that it kind of helps me. But if I had lyric stuff, I'd want to be tuning into what they're saying and stuff like that. So I don't know. That's just my perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
it's more freeform. It lets you decide what it's going to say to you.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what language you speak either. You can kind of understand it. Everybody knows the musical language. It's interesting to me because I feel like Disney, this is what Disney's missing in a lot of their nighttime spectaculars. Because I was listening to Wish's soundtrack the other day, which actually is mostly instrumentals. There is vocals to it, but there's a lot of parts of that where you hear music that is just solely instrumental. And it definitely has a different feel to it than when it is actually Moana belting you in the face with that medley. So, like, hearing that again, I'm so sick of that song, actually, Tom, but I have to be honest with you. But just having heard it just now, I was like, oh, I actually really like this song. It's a lovely melody without the, you know,
I understand
absent vocal. So I was happy you gave new life to that song.
And that's the point for me, like, especially with instrumentals and what you're doing, Tom, is that I love that with your left hand, you're supporting the melody and you're pumping out what the actual lines are that would be singing. And it's not in your face. There's no crazy vocal acrobatics going on or anything like that. It's just nice and clean. And it's the kind of thing. Like, you hear music like this when you're in Carthay, and while I'm in Carthay, I'm not paying attention to the music. And this would be the kind of thing where I'd be like, everyone shut up. I'm trying to listen to the song.
Awesome.
And then I get escorted out by Disney security.
I need you guys to be like my publicity agents.
We are your hype team.
We got you.
Yeah, you got it. Have a big churro.
You're describing things in a way that I can't even do, so it's really awesome.
Hey, anytime you need us, Tom, we'll be there.
Everybody shut up. Parents would say.
Sir, this is a Wendy's. What are you talking about? All right, we got two. Let's do two more.
Oh, my word.
Okay. Let's do two more.
Be our guest.
Yes. Good job, Jeremy. It's right on the tip of my tongue.
Ooh. I was going to say Rainbow Connection again.
It did sort of sound like that.
I was like, that's not right. Wait.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so sad.
Oh, man.
I like that. It's telling a story.
Absolutely.
Love it, dude. Yes.
Chills.
I love it. I mean, there's so much depth in that, just that little sample.
So
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, you go ahead, please.
I was going to say, this is another example where that was the middle part where Lumiere was singing life's, you know, their first server and he's not serving. He's not a lot in the second half of that piece. He talks most of the song, but he doesn't sing melody. Mm. I was thinking, how do I do this? Cause there is a melody there. And I thought, let's put it in the waltz time again, the 3/4 time to make it more French, to make it sound more like, it's almost like an accordion would be playing it, but to give it that different kind of feel. So it holds your attention longer, I thought, than just playing 4/4. So that's why I did that middle part like that. But I had to tell you, this was the song I practiced the most. I must've practiced the song 300 times. I mean, cause every chorus is a key change. Every verse is a key change. And Jeremy, I did have the music for this one too. I had in the songbook that I went back to see how each key change and where it went, but it changes keys every time. There's a lot of little incidentals in the melody, which was fun, but it took me, I really practiced this one hard to get this right.
I don't find the accidentals very fun. I don't really find the key changes fun either. They annoy me. I'm like,
just don't do it. Right.
So what I was going to say is I take voice lessons, and I actually had a lesson today, and we were practicing. Rude. So, and we were doing a song, and it's called Now When the Rain Falls. It's not important, but the beginning of the song starts out, and it kind of, the way it sounds, it sort of transports you, and it sounds, you hear the beginning of the song, and you're like, oh, there's rain. It's, you can picture yourself looking out a window with rain falling. And I get the same vibe from, from that, from specifically from Be Our Guest, where I'm like, I can feel the emotion that you're trying to convey.
Awesome. Great.
Different, like in that particular part of the song, like I can understand, like you're trying, it's a little morose. It's a little like, there's a lot of kind of sadness happening. And that's just, and my teacher was saying that, like, that's not something that you hear very often in music. It's pretty rare that you hear it. You hear music and you're able to kind of envision what it's a skill, like to be able to play something and have somebody mentally go where you want them to go.
That's true. Thank you. And it takes a lot of work too, to do that.
I'm sure.
A lot. It's hard. And you just kind of want, because at the end of the day, you just want to connect with people. You want people to like the music or connect to what you're trying to say, you know. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But this song I thought was really pretty to slow it down again and do that waltz in the middle. But if you listen to the whole song, it starts out really slow. And then the second verse gets a little bit bigger. And the end of the song is probably the loudest part of the album, because I did do a fuller piano at the very end. Because I thought, we got to do it. It's Be Our Guest. You know, you got to have like this. Let's just, as a tribute to the song, let's do a fuller ending where they're doing the big finale. Yeah. So it does get a little crescendo there at the end on that piece.
As it should.
Awesome.
As it should, of course.
Yeah.
I remember the last album that you did, you used a tool or something that mimicked a softening of the hammers on the piano to kind of dull the music. Did you do that here, or did you go with you wanted it to be a bit more punchy?
Just regular piano on this one. The last album we did what we call felt piano, which is part of that noir sample. It's the felt, where they put a piece of felt across the piano strings. So when the hammers hit it, it's softer. It's a softer piano. And then you can hear sometimes the hammer hitting the felt, like it's got a little weird sound, but it makes the piano really soft. Mm-hmm. But I did not want to do that for this one, because I just wanted to play more regularly on this one. So this is just the regular piano.
Okay.
On this one.
And the last one I wanted to play, Tom, was Grogu's Lullaby. And that's an original piece. That's why I didn't. Although I did think about pranking everybody, because I'm a notorious prankster. And then, you know, leaving everyone on the hook for like 2 minutes. But I thought it'd be really boring. Tell me about Grogu's Lullaby. It's an original piece by you.
This is the only original piece on the album. And I wanted to start with Star Wars and then end with like a Star Wars piece. And I love The Mandalorian. I can only explain it as, when I first saw Baby Yoda, before we knew his name was Grogu or whatever, that brought all the magic of the original trilogy back to me. Because I grew up in the 70s, and that was the original ones. The trilogy is what I loved, you know, 70s through the 80s. And that, seeing that whole Mandalorian, brought all that back to me. The magic of what the original trilogy was. Well, episodes 4, 5, and 6 anyway. And so I wanted to kind of write a lullaby to Grogu, because he's just such a great character. Like, I just love the characters, you know, everyone does. So I thought, let's just write him a melody and kind of top off the album that way, like end the album with that. So that's why I decided to do that.
All right, let's jump in and see what old Grogu's up to.
I do too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
Tom, you have a really good control.
Beautiful.
Over Thank the you. Tempo and the tones. You know,
I don't know.
You know how rare that is or whatever. But when I listen to the music, it's very. It doesn't feel forced. It feels. I don't know. You're really really good at controlling that. At Thank stretching you. Out the pieces, squishing them together, and really just taking me on. A journey through your lens of a song.
Awesome.
It's really
Thank
cool.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. I really do. It's just what I try to do. It's, you know, and I feel as hopefully that as you're saying comes through the music, these are all songs that I love, you know, that speak to me, that have a special place in my heart. And that makes it even, you know, that's what you can pour all the emotion in when you have such feeling for this music, these songs that shaped my childhood and all that kind of stuff. And the original lullaby, just baby Grogu was like so magical to me that it was just an inspiration to do that melody. So
it's great. The new album is called The Softer Side of Magic. And where can people pick it up? Anywhere, basically, right?
Anywhere. It's on all the streaming services, Spotify, Amazon, mm-hmm. Apple Music. You can download the MP3s if you want. It's like an iTunes store, or Apple, whatever. It's everywhere. You can just go to tomamimusic.com, my website, and all the links are there as well.
All right. Yeah. And I encourage people to buy it. You can stream it, but buy it. I mean, come on.
Yeah. Yeah. It's buying is great. I mean, streaming is okay too. I'm trying to build a good audience on Spotify for myself, but buying is the best way to support artists these days, but.
Absolutely.
You know.
Yeah, for sure. I did have
so
a
if
whole...
you hear it come on Spectra Radio, turn it off.
Well, again, the reason Spectra Radio rules is because you pay the rights. You pay the artists.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And as long as Tom is a member of whatever organization it is, he would be getting cuts.
There you go.
I'm a member of ASCAP, so I don't know if that's...
Yep.
You should. Are you affiliated with Sound Exchange? Because that's how the checks get cut.
I'm not sure, you know, CD Baby was the original place. I all my stuff goes through CD Baby, so I don't know. Oh. I don't know. But yeah, put it up on Spectrum. I want as many people to hear it as possible. Seriously. That's my goal.
It's cool. I like it a lot.
To hear it.
I did want to do a couple fun things with you and go through like a list, but you know, we've already been at it 45 minutes and Terrence still has to go and we have a whole other show to do. So, I want to cut down some of that. I do have a question for you though. You already talked about Lin-Manuel Miranda. Terrence and Jeremy love Lin-Manuel Miranda. In your opinion, is Lin-Manuel Miranda overrated or just semi-hated?
Is a rant coming? Whoa. Because I told Jeremy before the show, I love the rants between you and Jeremy. So, am I going to witness one here?
No, probably not. I mean, maybe.
I don't have a Manuel Miranda rant at the ready.
I think Lin-Manuel Miranda is great. I think he's a genius in what he does. I really do.
All right, you know what?
Have you seen Encanto? Have you seen Encanto, Tom?
Yes, and I liked it. I did one of the songs on the album, Dos Oreguitas. I did. I liked Encanto, but I know some people don't like
it.
I know Jason does not like it. I've listened to his rant, so I know. I know.
Learned to like it.
Man.
I like it. What do you guys say? I liked it. I thought the music was good. I liked it.
With Lin-Manuel particularly, I feel like he's very talented and he's backed himself into a corner. And he's only doing certain things. Like, I think that his ability to do so much more is there, but he's found something and he's making a lot of money off of it. So he's continually doing the same thing.
Okay. Okay.
I think that he is a guy. I think he's a guy that did Moana. He did Hamilton. He did Encanto. I think he can do a lot of great things. Oh, sorry, a lot of different things. I like maybe 20% of his songs. Maybe.
Did you ever see Hamilton? Did you ever
person,
see it?
In person, no. I saw it on Disney Plus.
I saw it in person with not the original cast, I saw, but it was one of those shows where it was like an experience like Les Mis. Like, it's not just a show. It's a, now I know there's issues with what's happening with it now, but there, it was like an experience. Like when you see Rent or Les Mis, it was just one of those shows that just takes you to a new level. And his music was just so powerful. But I can understand what you guys are saying. I mean, it's definitely a style, you know, that he has. But I just think he's so good at it.
Yeah,
like,
I mean,
I think it's gotten to the point where, like, he'll do something and we're like, oh, is this Lynn?
Oh. Is this Lynn?
Yeah, you guys are on a first name basis.
Is this Lynn MM?
Look, well, I mean, I think it's okay for an artist to have a style.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, like, you should be able to see, you know, there's certainly composers who you can hear. Thomas Newman. If you can watch a movie and you hear Thomas Newman soundtrack and it's like, I know who this is. Got it. You know, and then there are some who are a bit more versatile, such as John Debney.
Exactly. I feel like this is stifling his creativity of I feel like he could do more, and I feel like it could be better.
I think he's I think with Encanto he tried to do too much, and I don't know why. Like the Don't Talk About Bruno, that song annoys me, but it's that intro song, the family, so welcome to the family Madrigal.
I can't
it's nails on a chalkboard that have been removed from the chalkboard and stuck into my brain. I can't
say it again. Say it again.
I don't know, and I don't know why. I think it's too much. It's too cute.
Is it too much?
Yeah, it's like
way too much information that should have been done naturally through the story instead of throwing at us in a 2-minute song.
It's like after
I get that.
It's like after I take a shower and groom myself. I'm too cute. I have to stay away until I get ugly again. And that's what that's what it is.
I think that's his Broadway background, though, because that's what Broadway does. You know, Les Mis is a really long story, and you know, chapters of that book are put into one song. You know, so I think that's what he knows to do.
That was my
actually sort of appreciate that.
That was my revelation. Where it's if you think of that music as a play, and not as like Moana or Beauty and the Beast. The reason makes sense. I don't like it. I don't know. It's not Little Shop of Horrors. You know what I mean?
Okay. I understand.
I think as a person with zero musical background, didn't know what you guys were talking about with the 1-3-4. I don't know anything about that.
Okay.
It's just math, dude. It's fine.
I hated Encanto the first time I saw it.
Same.
Okay.
But then the second time, I was like, it's not that bad. Same. And then now I actually look forward to hearing the songs come on every single day that we hear them.
Disagree.
And so I would say that that's a testament to him, because I don't think it's the repetition for me, because I don't do that with any song, but those songs are very catchy. We Don't Talk About Bruno, hated it so much. And now I know every single word, sing it all the time.
I'm really sorry.
Stanza.
It's like if you hear it enough, it gets stuck in your head.
Well,
yeah, absolutely. All right, Tom, who's better, Alan Menken or the Sherman Brothers? Right now, let's go.
Oh,
putting
my
you on the spot.
God, that's hot.
Who's better?
I love Alan Menken. I do. I love his writing, but the Sherman Brothers are awesome too. It's hard to pick one of those.
You have to. Or else
I'd go with Alan Menken.
There you go.
Menken and Howard Ashman were just, oh my God, they were so good.
That was you'll never top that.
No, I mean, they were just so, it was just such a duo that was perfect for each other. And just the music they made was so good.
Who's more samey? Which composer is more samey? Randy Newman or Randy Newman?
Zany?
Samey.
S-A-M-E-Y.
Who sounds the same after every project they've ever done? Randy Newman or Randy Newman?
Yeah, Randy.
Good answer.
Just picking on Randy Newman. I don't know.
Poor Randy.
Finally, though, what video game are you playing right now? You're a gamer.
I was just playing Halo before I got on the call.
All right.
I haven't played Halo in a while, but I'm also playing, I have a Nintendo Switch. So I was playing some of the new maps in Mario Kart.
Nice. You're not doing
Mario Kart.
You're not doing Elden Ring.
No, I don't know that one. Is that good? I don't know.
No, don't do it. Well, it's great. It's like a Dark Souls game, if you've heard of Dark Souls, where it's like they intentionally make it super, super hard. And they're like sort of reimagining what video games should be, quote unquote, where they don't make the final boss easy at all. It's literally
it's like super hard. Cuphead. Have you played Cuphead?
I have played Cuphead.
It's impossible.
It's the same argument I make with Elden Ring. I love the artwork in Cuphead, but it's too hard for me and I don't want to break my Switch in half. Same thing with Elden Ring. The artwork is like, it's like Game of Thrones and like really cool anime sort of put together, and it's like medieval, but monsters are just, it's phenomenal. The artwork is mind-blowing, but it's hard. And I finally gave up on it. I was like, I can't do this. I just can't do it.
Hey, Jeremy, have you ever played Cupface?
No, I've never heard of that.
I don't know what you guys are talking about. Cuphead. Sorry. I don't know what Cuphead is.
You have to be cool.
It's a video game where you're just trying to get through levels and destroy things, but it's done in the Art Deco of the 1940 cartoons. So you're playing in the 1930s and 40s cartoons.
It's tight.
It's really cool.
Look it up on YouTube. It's the art style is awesome. But
the art style's great.
Suggest looking up some Elden Ring on YouTube, Tom, and check it out.
Because
the art style is beautiful, and I'm frustrated because I understand what they're trying to do. They're just trying to make a different genre of game. But you would hit so many more people if you just put it on easy mode. Let me just play the game. I don't want to have to struggle with it and whatever. Anyway, Tom, look, I appreciate your time. Thank you very much, man. The softer side of magic, you can go to tomamine.com. That's TOMAMEEN.com.
That's correct.
And check out all of Tom's offerings there. And be sure to follow him on Spotify and then go buy the albums and then stream them.
Thank you. Well, thank you so much for having me. I always love coming on here, you guys. It's so nice to see all you. And
you're welcome anytime.
Thank you so much. The support is awesome, and I appreciate it.
Perfect. Well, we love having you on, man. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Hang on, everybody. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to let Tom go. We'll be right back. We're going to listen to Terrence tell us about the soaring all over the place history of flying over your city. This is Ears Up.
Nice.
We'll be right back. And now, back to the show that's more fun than waiting in line for Peter Pan on a hot August Anaheim day. Ears Up. All right, thanks for hanging around, everybody. The great Tom Amin has left the building.
He's wonderful.
Yeah. Good guy, man. Super happy. For some reason, likes us. I don't know why.
Yeah, I know. He's such like a nice guy, and he deals with all of our sarcasm. You know, he doesn't. He doesn't care.
I think he likes everything.
Yeah,
maybe
including us.
Yeah, I mean, why not? I mean, he also likes the Bantha Milk guys. For God's sakes, I mean,
those guys are cool.
Yeah, sure, man. I'm kidding. All right, Terrence, welcome back. First of all, buddy, good to see you. It's been a while.
Yeah.
It's been a hot
good
minute.
To be back.
Doing all right?
Be back. No, but I'm good. Let's go.
Hey, man, if your feet hit the floor in the morning, you're winning.
That's true.
Just
want to make sure I didn't ask if we didn't have time before the show started. Do you have my tracks for tonight?
Of course I do.
Okay. All right. They don't sound as good as the ones that Jeremy does for his segments, but we're going to go with it.
Okay.
All right.
Perfect.
Ready?
Oh, I'm ready.
Welcome to 1995. Michael Eisner is the CEO of the Walt Disney Company, and his right-hand man, Frank Wells, has recently passed away, leaving Eisner without his most trusted confidant and friend. The company is reeling from the hemorrhage that is Euro Disney. What's the best thing to do at this point? Let's build a new park! The Imagineers were hard at work on a second gate for the Disneyland Resort in Anaheim, where the old Disneyland parking lot stood. The second park was slated to be called Westcott, which would be the West Coast replica of Epcot with the central...
Yeah, you wish, you guys. You wish. Okay.
No, honestly, anyone listening, if you have not looked up Westcott, look it up. It was amazing. There were plans for you to be able to stay in hotels that were within the park, and to be able to leave the hotel and just kind of stroll around the area at night if you wanted to. It was amazing. They had something called Space Station Earth, which would be a larger version of the geodesic sphere that is Spaceship Earth in Epcot. But yeah, They were broke.
We were robbed.
Yeah, so no, we can't do that.
And so instead, we got
farm equipment.
Yeah.
Yeah. So while the park was canceled at Westcott, after a weekend retreat with the Imagineers, they came up with the concept of a theme park in California dedicated to California, which is genius. While this park would be destroyed in reviews, there was one attraction that was and would continue to be loved. First conceptualized in 1996 as Ultra Flight, it was conceived as a flight simulator ride that would take people through a flight above California with the riders gliding above projections on an OmniMax screen with riders dipping and diving. So kind of think of a faster version of Peter Pan's ride system meets what you see at a laundromat. That's literally how it was described. The riders were to be loaded onto three separate levels. Four people? What do you say? You say four people?
Floor people?
The people were to be located on three separate levels. Sorry, the riders. Three separate levels, and the sheer magnitude of the ride vehicle, the loading, the moving around the building, it would make the building much too large for the footprint given to them. So Mark Sumner, who was the principal Imagineer on the project, he realized that if things weren't changed soon, this ride would never see the light of day. While he was visiting some family for Thanksgiving, Sumner found an old Erector set in his childhood home's attic. In 3 hours' time, he created a crude but a working model of the flight vehicle. The vehicle would allow all guests to be loaded on a single level, and then they could lift them out and above the OmniMax screen. This would significantly cut down on the footprint of the building. The following Monday, the idea was pitched, and it was a hit. While the building was being built, it was time to start taking footage of the places that would be visited during your ride. This was difficult. In fact, there was so much red tape that it took over 2 years to secure the permits needed to film. The company rented helicopters, custom equipped with cameras that shot in IMAX HD 48 frames per second, twice as fast as what was normally used at the time. I'll tell you about some of the scenes later. We're going to get into what our boy Michael Eisner wanted. So for the scene overlooking Yosemite, it took 18 months to get a yes to filming. In fact, they were finally able to film. It was the first time that there was a flyover in Yosemite since the mid-1900s.
Wow, dude.
Yeah. The Monterey and the Point Lobos scenes were even harder. Both of these areas are considered to be animal sanctuaries. So in order to film in these locations, much care had to be taken to ensure that the filming would not disturb any of the protected wildlife inhabiting the area. So, in fact, when you watch it, you see some of the boats there. Some of the boats are actually National Oceanic and Atmosphere Administration boats who are positioned there purposefully to keep an eye on the animal and the bird activity during the filming.
Wow.
Yes.
What's a bird? So they wanted to make sure.
They wanted to make sure that nothing that was done was going to disturb what was going on there.
You would think they would just pick somewhere else to film.
Yeah, I know,
like,
right?
It's so hard. Yeah. Like, California's pretty big.
Yeah.
There's kind of a lot of things that you could film. Like,
yes.
Why pick the tough one when you don't really need to?
Okay, and I didn't even know this.
They picked the tough one because they wanted to give people a realistic idea of what California was like. But the problem is that they're also dealing with Michael Eisner. So Michael Eisner wanted it to be all L.A.
Oh, geez.
Ew.
All L.A. So think about what he said with the original opening of California Adventure. We want to build an homage to L.A. You don't need to drive around L.A. Come to California Adventure and you'll see all of L.A.
That's awful. That's a terrible idea.
Yeah,
it's gross. And he's, like I said, he's so with Frank Wells took all the crappy ideas that he had and he would say, no, we're not doing this, Michael. We can do this one. Oh, this is a great one. We can do that. He didn't have that guy anymore. And so he basically had free reign to see what he wanted, say what he wanted to do.
Like, what are you going to film in L.A.? Like Skid Row? Like,
so,
I mean,
this is
the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
So right. This is what he wanted to film in L.A. Some of the things that he threw out there. He said, if people are driving around L.A., think about all the landmarks they want to see and let's bring it to them. So let's bring them the Hollywood Walk of Fame. Let's bring them Man's Chinese Theater. The Hollywood sign. Let's do all these different things they would see if they're driving around L.A. and let's bring them there. And they're like, we're not going to do that.
That's so stupid. Right.
Century Boulevard. We love it.
Right.
That's
right.
Awful.
Victory Boulevard. We love it.
Oh, nice. We love
Sixth
LA.
Street. We love it. I love LA.
So,
I mean, it's not the worst.
Yes,
idea.
It is. Let's think about it.
Because at Universal, they have that Jimmy Fallon New York ride.
Well, first of all, there's two problems with that. Number one, Jimmy Fallon. Number two, New York. But if you leave it just the ride, it's fine. I mean, I see what you're doing. I see what you're saying. And I sort of agree with you, Jeremy. We're like, it's not the worst idea to sort of, you know, L.A. is a world travel destination. I get it. L.A.'s big. There's a lot of, I love old L.A., you know, like the Art Deco sort of period of L.A., the old bridges they have across the canals or whatever. But it's sort of, I mean, and what else are you going to do, I guess? But it is sort of the high point of lack of creativity amongst Imagineers and amongst Disney in general with, you have a brand new park. Mm-hmm. You got to put something in it, and you're going to just go an hour away.
I mean, to be perfectly honest, it would probably be more enjoyable than actually going to those places.
Well, sure, LA's so terrible.
It's heck of a lot safer,
but yeah. But it's also so nuanced, and it's like you're not going to really get the heart of LA. But why LA? Why not? Like you said, California is huge. If you're going to do California, why not anywhere else? Anything else? But
also, can I say one more thing? Anyone who tells me, don't blame Bob Chapek, the CEO doesn't get involved in these kinds of things. Yes, they do.
Absolutely.
Here you go.
Yeah.
So, yes, you're absolutely right about that. Also, you have a brand new park called California Adventure. You have Superstar Limo, where he's paying homage to L.A. and to everything going on in there. It was just another bad call by him, and luckily they were able to talk him out of it.
Should be like, so, anything San Francisco.
Mm-hmm. Right. San Francisco would be great.
Actually, so, would be much better.
Yeah.
So 2 years to 2 years to get the filming done. The filming is finally done. And the attraction was built and the park opens. The park is panned. Like, it's horrible. Like, people are saying this is so bad. People are going for a couple of hours and leaving. This is my favorite quote from John Hinch, one of the most famous Imagineers of all time. He's quoted as saying, "I preferred the old parking lot."
Oh, damn.
Ouch.
Yeah.
Ouch.
So, but the thing that people agree on is that this attraction is amazing. So this is what it was like first day. So you walk into an old flight hangar. You walk through the Flight Hall of Fame, where you see an homage to California's aviation history, including profiles of the P-511 Mustang, the SR-71 Blackbird, and the Bell X-1. There's also a section dedicated to aviators such as John J. Montgomery, Amelia Earhart, who I didn't realize until I did the research, had moved to California in the latter part of her life, Jimmy Doolittle, Charles Lindbergh, Jack Northrop, the Wright brothers, Howard Hughes, Jacqueline Cochran, Kelly Johnson, Paul McCready, and Chuck Yeager. In the queue, you're greeted by a variety of music from aviation-themed films such as Patton, MacArthur, Air Force One, and many others. Jason, track one. I feel like Jeremy. Track one. Now, surprisingly, those are not all the same song, but they have the same kind of vibe, and it's kind of cool. Like, when you're in there looking, this is what you're hearing. Also, real quick, if I can give some quick feedback on the last show.
What was the last show?
The last show was the ranking all the different lands.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, yes. So number one, yes, it would have been extremely annoying for me to be on there if we're talking about Disneyland versus California Adventure. Number two, I am very proud of you all for saying New Orleans Square is the best land. And number three, there is area music in Adventureland. There's a lot of drums and stuff like that.
There's not.
There is.
Apparently, according to cast members, all those sounds are spillover from Jungle Cruise. There's no area-specific music.
It's an album.
There's a website that you can go to that has all the area music of Adventureland. I'm not going to say the website because we don't listen to that. We only listen to Spectro Radio. All right. So before you enter the theater, you're separated into three different lines, Alpha, Bravo, and Charlie Gate. Each gate gets to watch a pre-boarding video featuring Patrick Walburton, Putty, if you will. And actually, thank you to the guys from TSR, from the Supreme Resort, for pointing out the fact that he gives a kid a thumbs up and says, good job, when the kid didn't even buckle his own seatbelt. It was his parent who did it for him.
Well, he didn't whine about it. And that's what you can expect of a six-year-old.
So the score for the ride itself was created by Jerry Goldsmith. Upon Jerry Goldsmith's first flight, he was moved to tears due to how the score interacted with the movie and his remembrance of his father's love of aviation. Track two, a little bit of the score.
Homie needs to go see a therapist. Yeah. I mean, imagine crying over this.
If I wrote it, I might.
I mean, I could imagine that.
I totally could do it.
It feels like you're on the ride. Just hearing it feels like you're on the ride.
For sure.
The ride vehicle consists of three rows under a wing-like canopy with a maximum occupancy of 87, meaning that there are 261 people in each of the three theaters experiencing the ride at the same time. You're moved out and up on the vehicle with your feet freely dangling. Also, the structure itself weighs over 1 million pounds.
And God, get out of here.
And it lifts 37 tons per ride. The vehicle, as we all know, it also utilizes smellitizers. So when you're on the ride, your first destination is the Golden Gate Bridge in San Francisco. You then fly to the Redwood Creek, followed by Napa Valley, complete with hot air balloons. Next is Monterey Bay, and you get that little bit of a sea smell while you're going through there. Then Lake Tahoe. Forgot to mention this earlier. It took over a year for them to get access to film over Lake Tahoe. In that scene, there are extras that were planted there and waited for upwards of 5 hours for the helicopter to get in place for them to be able to film their scenes. In the scene, a group of skiers launch off of a cliff, and you see one of the skiers fall, and later on they added in the sound of him biffing. So you can hear him go, oh, when he hits the snow when he falls. Then you go to the PGA West Palmer course in La Quinta, where they hit a golf ball at you. Then the Valencia orange groves, and you get the smell of the oranges. Then the Anza Borrego Desert Park State Park. Then you go to San Diego and to Malibu Beach, followed by downtown L.A., where you see the Staples Center, and finally to Disneyland. Guests were convinced when they were riding the ride that the ride was not only moving them up and down, but it was actually moving them left to right. But the Imagineers achieved this feeling by slightly tilting and pitching the seats as the projected images slightly pitch left to right to make you feel like you're swinging. All in all, it was 4 minutes and 37 seconds ride. In 2016, and also this is at Epcot, this is in Shanghai, this is in Tokyo DisneySea as well. In 2016, a new version was introduced called Soarin' Around the World. This will take guests to many popular areas across the globe. You go to the Matterhorn in Switzerland, to fjord in Greenland with a polar bear jumping in the water, the Sydney Harbor, the Neuschwanstein Castle, Kilimanjaro National Park, the Great Wall of China, the Great Pyramids, the Taj Mahal, which most people, unless you've been there, you don't realize the Taj Mahal is also slightly tilting to the left in real life. The West and East Mitten Buttes in Arizona, the Lau Islands in Fiji, Aguaza Falls in Brazil. You would go to the Eiffel Tower unless you're in Tokyo and you go to the Tokyo Tower. And then you would end up, depending on which park you were in either Disneyland, Epcot, Shanghai Disneyland, or Tokyo DisneySea. Now, the soundtrack for Soarin' Around the World, Soarin' Around the Globe, Soarin' Across the World, Soarin' All Over Your, Soarin' Up in Your City, the soundtrack was written by Bruce Broughton, and it paid homage to the original by Jerry Goldsmith, track three.
¶¶
I like Jeremy slightly tilting to the Eiffel Tower. Eiffel Tower, seriously. So the outside has slightly changed in California to adapt to the area's change. Originally, when the park opened, that area was called Condor Flats. It's now called the Grizzly Peak Airfield. So they added a water tower and removed the rocket. All in all, the attraction cost roughly $18 million to build, but it's been a staple since the opening day of the park. The original version at Epcot, the queue is themed differently. It was originally themed to be an airport, and it had passengers taking a flight to California to see the attractions. The Shanghai Disneyland version was themed as an ancient observatory and the temple to the Arbori tribe's Connor god. The pre-show and safety spiel was hosted by a shaman, and it's entitled Soaring Over the Horizon. Now, the Tokyo Disney Sea version is Soarin' Fantastic Flight. It's set in a museum of the Fantastic Flight, which is hosted as a retrospective on the life of Camellia Falco. Now, if you've never heard of Camellia Falco, the reason you have never heard of her is because she is completely made up for this. Oh. She is the daughter of Celino and Guilano Falco, founders of the Museum of Fantastic Flight.
Sure.
She participated in a lot of different things, a trip down the Zambezi River. She was in a glider designed by Leonardo da Vinci. She died in 1875, but her spirit would linger in the halls of the museum. And during a special retrospective of her life in 1901, her spirit would invite visitors to take flight of fancy aboard the Dream Flyers.
That's
all fake. Soarin' over California, the world, and in Yosemite.
How wonderful that Tokyo is still creating original stories for their parks that don't have to do with Moana.
That's a good point.
You know, they're like, let's come up with a story for it.
Speaking of original stories.
The 21st Amendment Brewery's latest beer release, Tropical Brew Free or Die IPA, puts an island vacation in their whimsically designed cans. That's right, cans. This refreshing year-round release, Tropical IPA, is brewed with pale and Munich malts, brimming with Azaka, Citra Cryo, and Mosaic hops, and topped with a splash of pineapple flavor. The result is a clean, refreshing beer featuring a mix of sweet malt, balanced bitterness, fruit-forward hops, and a nice tropical vacation at the finish. Tropical Brew For Your Die IPA is available at your local good beer shop, neighborhood taproom, and anywhere else people come together to find great craft beer.
Well, good job, Terrence.
Thank you.
I have a question.
Yes.
I have an answer.
It's an old wives' tale or folklore that the person hitting the golf ball at you at PGA West is Michael Eisner himself. Did you find out if that's true or not?
I actually did research that, and it is inconclusive. Could not find anything.
Let's figure it out. Let's call him. Let's get Mike on the phone. Two things. Number one, I've been looking. I cannot find definitive area music for Disneyland Adventureland. There is in Disney World.
Oh.
But not in Disneyland. And that site you were talking about, Terrence, you tell me later. I mean, you know, we've had Disney Chris on before, so it's fine. But it's like the music that he has is like music that used to be played here, used to be played there, or now is played at Adventureland Tower or whatever, but there's nothing definitive that's in that land that's not spillover from Indy or Jungle Cruise.
Okay, so I would say this. Let me say it again.
Oh, okay. As per my last email.
Yeah.
Per my last email, yeah, I will say this again. All right. We only listen to and we only support Spectro Radio or Disney Chris on here. There is a different website
has
all of the area music of everywhere in Disneyland.
Send it. I'm curious.
I'll send it to you right now. It has specific things right here that I am looking at right now.
It literally says Disneyland Adventureland.
Yeah.
Area music. And does it say like it used to be played at the Bazaar or at the Tahitian Terrace or whatever?
No, there's stuff that's at the Bazaar, the stuff that's a steel drum band
yeah,
that you hear.
That's not area music. If it's played at the Bazaar, no. It's in the thing.
And then there's the Adventureland Suite, which is the area music.
It's not, though. It's not.
Okay.
What's
the Adventureland Suite? Can I rent it?
Yes, you can, as a matter of fact. Real quick, just because this would make Jeremy laugh, maybe, perhaps. So I found a list, and some website ranked the best Disney movie composers, top 10. And I was going to go through with Tom and, like, you know, have a whole thing, but we kept them too long. Number one, the top composer, Alan Menken.
Oh.
Number one.
Okay. I'm on board with
then
that.
Then it's Michael Giacchino.
Yes, he did the soundtrack to that horrible movie Tomorrowland, but the soundtrack was fantastic.
He also did Incredibles, Ratatouille, Up, and Zootopia, and Coco.
Oh, yes, he did do Coco, which is also another fantastic.
Then you got Randy Newman, who sort of in this picture looks a lot like Terrence's grandma, which is very funny. Number four, Oliver Wallace. Then you have George Bruns, Hans Zimmer. Then John Debney at number seven.
Well, not for nothing. In Debney's defense, in his defense,
defense of Debney,
he hasn't done a ton of movies. Mm. He did the remake of The Jungle Book, but Debney's really more known for his music in the parks,
which is why we love him.
Okay,
correct. He did the soundtrack to Spectro Magic, and when they redid all of the Fantasyland attractions, he reorchestrated them. He reorchestrated Small World when they opened Disneyland Paris. So he's parks oriented, but you know what? We love him, and he's done some other things. He also wrote the soundtrack to the early 90s NBC hit sci-fi adventure Sequest DSV.
I remember trying to watch that, and I was like, I can't do this.
Oh my God, I loved it.
Oh my God, I couldn't do it. All right, we are going to get out of here, I think, everybody. Thank you very much for tuning in. Of course, thank you again to Tom Amin. You can go to TomAmin.com and check out his brand new album, The Softer Side of Magic. And support Tom. He's a good dude. He comes on the show when he doesn't have to. So that makes him automatically, you know, a good guy. If you're listening live and you are a Patreon supporter, give us 5 minutes. We've got to make our drink, and they'll be going live with The Secret Show. And I promise I'll click the right button this time so the show will actually start on time. Not on time, but, you know, you get the full thing. Anyway, thanks a lot, everybody, for tuning in. And until next time, we'll see you in the parks.